where the story goes, we follow. Chris Smith on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
I'm going to catch up very shortly with Kevin Donnelly, Dr. Kevin Donnelly, and we're going to talk about the eSafety Commissioner, the things that are banned, the fines that are about to be imposed on X, and where this is heading. But meanwhile, a transgender person has shared their experience after receiving an experimental new surgery that involves removing the entirety of their external genitals. Adrian from Florida, age just 27, is non-binary, meaning they do not conform to either male or female, and had the operation at a controversial gender clinic in Texas that has been dubbed Frankenstein's Lab. It is one of a handful of hospitals in the country that offer genital nullification surgery. I have spoken about that Texas clinical transition company before, because you'll remember one of their care workers got on with Dr. Phil, the daytime television program in the United States, and basically became a whistleblower at their immoral and outrageous techniques. Well, one of those techniques is this genital nullification surgery, a procedure which involves removing all external genitalia to create a smooth transition down from the stomach to the groin. A small but hidden opening remains in order for urine to exit the body. Those born biologically female undergo a hysterectomy, which stops them menstruating. I had to use a catheter the first 2 weeks, but I'm peeing normally now, Adrian said, 2 months after the op. They described the procedure, which cost $10,000 up front, as a body modification journey that will transform them into a non-normative human. I'm sorry, but these people are mentally deranged, and should be receiving mental psychology treatment before any kind of transition surgery. Adrian, 27, documented the experience on Reddit. They said their motivation for getting the procedure performed at the Crane Center last year was dysphoria, defined as feeling discomfort about a particular gender. They opted for nullification because they could not afford surgery to construct an artificial penis. Adrian said they have a desire to look as alien-esque as possible, also expressing an interest in the removal of their belly button. Adrian was born a woman and began taking testosterone hormones age 23 in August 2020. In 2021, they had top surgery and also completely removed their nipples. Having their nipples removed also played a role in my desire for nullification. I came out fully as a queer, binary, trans man shortly after top surgery. I'm sorry. I'm not a psychiatrist or a psychologist, but that to me is mentally deranged. The fact that you would change your body to that degree, what, to feel like as if you're not a male and you're not a female? Is that your groovy thing to achieve? Is that what the outcome is all about? Is that what you want? You might want that for a particular 2 month period, but what do they want in 10 years' time? This is forever stuff. And I'm sorry, it's mentally deranged. Very quickly, a fishing community in Queensland, they're not happy. Residents of an isolated community in the Gulf of Carpentaria say the town's survival is at the mercy of a Queensland government decision. It wouldn't be like the Queensland Labor government not to look after rural landholders, would it? Currumba is a remote fishing getaway. You've got to get a plane and a four-wheel drive to get there. Sometimes needs to be loaded onto a truck to pass through floodwaters and a boat to carry passengers. It's located at the mouth of the Norman River. It's got 400 permanent residents, and it's been described as a paradise. The local mayor said a Queensland government plan to restrict the use of gill nets to protect dugong, dolphins, turtles and sharks threatened the town's viability. You know, these decisions that are made about local fishing communities are made in the centre of Brisbane, in an office full of public servants who would never have been or lived in areas like this. If they were decisions made in concert with those who understand the environment in those areas, well, that would be a different thing. But I can guarantee you, I bet my house on the fact that this was made by suited public servants in Brisbane who'd never been remotely to Currumba. He said, it's going to be devastating. It's going to ruin Corumba like you would not believe. There's a whole lot of support industries that rely on the fishermen for survival. Of course there is. What else do they revert to? What else? Mining? No. The Corumba fishing industry is worth $30 million annually, and they're about to bring it crashing down because they want to make sure that we protect the dolphins. You don't think the fishermen in that village are trying to protect dolphins? And if dolphins are caught in nets, what's the bet that they do release them? Of course they do their best. Of course they do their best. Nothing's perfect, but imagine destroying a $30 million fishing industry and therefore destroying an entire village of 600, 700 people who rely on that fishing industry to survive, to put food on their table. You just wipe out an entire community. But what would a Labor government in Queensland know when hardly any of their MPs have ever been part of a rural community? This is Chris Smith on TNT.
Bringing you a world view.
I like to hear what's going on around the world.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Let's revert now to this discussion I briefly had with Renee Heath early on in the program, with someone whose lifetime specialty has been political correctness and cancel culture, and objecting to both these very trendy ideals. Kevin John Donnelly AM is an Australian educator, author, and commentator. He's a senior fellow at the Australian Catholic University's PM Glynn Institute. Some of his notable titles include Taming the Black Dog from 2014, The Culture of Freedom 2016, How Political Correctness is Destroying Australia in 2018, and in 2019, A Politically Correct Dictionary and Guide. Kevin Donnelly, welcome back to TNT.
Thank you very much, Chris. Always a pleasure.
Wow. This is a really good time that we have you on the program because the last 5 days has been epic in terms of free speech and the threat to free speech. George Orwell's version of a world under an authoritarian regime in 1984 has certainly emerged 40 years later. And the chief conductor of this muffled orchestra on free speech is the eSafety Commissioner, Julie Inman Grant. Can you believe what they're now trying to censor and the fines they're willing to impose if their version of what we need to see is not followed?
Well, I'm glad you referred to George Orwell there, Chris. As you know, Winston, the character, his job was in the Ministry of Truth, which had nothing to do with telling the truth. It was very like Stalin's Russia, like Putin's Russia today, or China with Xi Jinping. What happens is once government gets control of the media, we'll call it the media generally, whether it's print or digital or electronic, what they do is they shape the narrative and they control what people can hear or see or listen to. And it troubles me and you deeply. I mean, I remember straight after the vote, the referendum on the voice to parliament in Australia, the Indigenous voice to parliament, that the government lost 60-40%. The Albanese government talked about introducing a bill about what they called misinformation, and what they wanted to do, in fact, was to ensure that those who were against government decisions or against government policy would not have the freedom to express a point of view.
Exactly.
And after losing the voice vote, they thought, well, one way to correct this is to control what people read, think, and hear. So it is very Orwellian and very dangerous.
Yeah, very dangerous indeed, because I have a feeling that some of the most graphic images or graphic footage that we have seen in our lifetimes, and Craig Kelly raised the spectre of never seeing that young Vietnamese girl who was burnt by napalm and she was naked in the middle of the street in Vietnam, never being able to see that and therefore never having the world emotionally on side in trying to stop the Vietnam War. That was the emotional image that made absolutely everyone sit up and take notice about where this war was up to and where it needs to go. And yet what we're trying to do here, or what the censor is trying to do, the eSafety Commissioner, is take away images that create debate, that end up changing laws, that move people emotionally and make people truly understand what the issue is all about.
I agree with you, Chris. And as I say, a picture often tells a thousand words.
Yeah.
But I know, talking to my daughter, Amelia, and she's very much involved in social networking, in what I call the digital world. Part of the complexity here and part of the problem is there is so much on the web, whether it's a particular chat room or a particular, whether it's Twitter or Facebook or Instagram. What happens is there's so much information, so much that young people in particular can hear or see. Given the fact that they've not been educated properly, as we know, Chris, what they teach in the curriculum now is pretty dumbed down. Mm. When I went to school, we were taught clear thinking. So we had what the Americans would call very good crap detectors. We could look at two or three or four arguments. We could look at the evidence. We could weigh it up. But part of the difficulty now is a lot of young people, they respond emotionally rather than thinking clearly. So what we have to understand, I think, is what they see on social networking has to be balanced. And hopefully they draw on a number of different perspectives. They get arguments for and against. And if they see an image, for example, and I know some of these images can be very graphic, they don't always go to the conclusion, well, this is the truth. They need to be work out very carefully what is fact and what is fiction.
Mm-hmm. Very, very true. Otherwise, all of a sudden, the truth ends up being an interpretation of reality and not reality.
Exactly right. And I taught Year 12 English for many years, and I mentioned clear thinking. And so many young people now respond emotionally. I've seen 12-year-old girls on TV crying because they said they can't have children, they can't have babies, because the world's about to end because of man-made climate change in 2030. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that shocking example of an American, I think, in California, non-binary.
Florida, yeah.
Florida, sorry. Non-binary. They've had this operation. And as you know, I think you've spoken about it, the CAS report in England only recently said a lot of these young people suffering gender confusion, gender anxiety, or dysphoria, they really should not have the ability to act on that straight away. Mm. And again, what they often see, young people see on social media, can reinforce the idea that gender is a social construct, that it's fluid and limitless. And what we have to be aware of is that that's not the truth. They respond emotionally without having that ability to think rationally, logically, and clearly.
Well, let me stay with that topic before we go to a quick break. But if the CAS report is warning the world, and the psychologist was warning the world, they weren't just warning the UK. If they were saying that we've got to stop the use of puberty blockers for dysphoria, what has the Australian government done since that report was released, Kevin?
Well, the Australian government's done nothing, and I'll be honest, as we always are, Chris, Labor and Liberal governments, so-called conservative governments, have let this go on and on.
They have.
And when Christopher Pyne, the Liberal Education Minister, federally was in power, they actually launched an updated version of Safe Schools, and that's the gender program put together by Ros Ward, who describes herself as a Marxist. And if you go on the wellness, wellbeing website that the Commonwealth Government now funds, there are resources there telling young people as young as 8 or 10 that they can decide what gender they want and that parents need not be told. Mm. So Australia's, the politicians in charge, they're asleep at the wheel.
Yeah, and parents need to contact their local members, Quick Smart, and say, what are you doing? What is your party doing? What is the Parliament doing about this CAS report? Really important before Australia follows the United States and many of the states that are actually saying parents are not to know what their own kids are have in their minds about transitioning. Like, it's just outrageous. I've got to take a quick break, Kevin. I'll be back in a second. We'll talk about a whole heap of things, including US voters not happy with their nation being so politically correct. That's not too much of a surprise. We'll be back with Kevin Donnelly after this on TNT.
TNT's Pella Neuroth-Taylor.
It'd be interesting that if this is kind of Britain's recent soft power exports, we know that the transgender debate and the Scottish censorship law made shockwaves around the world. Who'd have thought that Brexit Britain, this country that was founded in the spirit of liberty and for whom Brexit was supposed to be a relaunch of Britain as a country of liberty, has now seems to be exporting censorious attitudes and laws, because just as the smoking ban in pubs law was exported from the British Isles, Ireland, actually, they very quickly spread to the rest of Europe, this law might spread equally quickly. We don't know. So within 5 years' time, a smoking ban for teenagers and then kept up as they grow older might spread to the whole of Europe. So Europeans, listen up.
Pella Neuroth-Taylor on today's News Talk, TNT.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's News Talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
Plug in.
Website?
tntradio.live.
Check it out.
Today's News Talk Radio.
It's the coolest.
TNT.
I've got Dr. Kevin Donnelly with me right now. US voters, Kevin, by a wide margin, I might add, say the nation is too politically correct. Increasingly warn of racism against white people. And a significant fifth of people surveyed say violence may be needed to put the country back on track, according to the poll. The PBS NPR MARA survey offers quite a snapshot of a very polarised country heading into a presidential contest in just over 6 months' time, doesn't it?
It does, and it doesn't surprise me that so many people in America are against political correctness, which is now really far more infectious in terms of what I call wokery. So it really has infected our schools, our universities, our political parties, as you know, Chris. Interestingly enough, in Australia, the Australian Broadcasting Commission, even though they're left of centre, they had a survey a couple of years ago, a social survey of people's views, and I think it was about 68% of Australians felt that political correctness was a danger.
Right.
And I've seen a number of surveys in America and Australia where young people in particular are fed up with political correctness, with being indoctrinated, with being told what to think on issues, whether it's gender or climate change, or whether you should be a patriot, whether you should defend your country. I mean, they talk down Western culture. Apparently, we're all guilty of being white supremacists. There's nothing worthwhile in whether it's America, England, or Australia. So the tide is beginning to turn, and I just hope that with the help of people like yourself, who are cultural warriors, that we can really engage in this fight. And you only have to see what happened with Ron DeSantis in Florida, where parents became very active and helped elect him because they were fed up with gender theory in schools. They were fed up with political correctness. And there was a meeting, I'm sure you know of it, in London only recently, the Alliance for Responsible Citizenship, where they had over 1,000 people involved. So I think people are lighting small fires. The pendulum is starting to turn, and that's much needed. It's a good thing.
Yeah, it has to be a good thing. From a journalist at Politico, this is an interesting story, and I haven't covered it over the last week. The way it's turned out, I wish I had. It goes like this. It has so many twists and turns, this story, but it's a really good lesson in the hatred that is built up in some countries towards conservative views. Over the years, I've learned that when someone says, "I believe in freedom of speech, but what really matters is what they say next." So when negotiating began with the director of the Concert Noble venue in Brussels about whether the National Conservatism Conference would go ahead there, bad news was imminent. They canned the conference because the director was scared for his staff, who felt intimidated by the news that left-wing anti-Fa activists were going to attack the venue. And when they asked for police protection, what did the mayor of Brussels do? The mayor intervened and forbid police play any role in the conference. The mayor admitted he didn't want the NatCon conference to take place. Now, they went further with this and sought a hearing before the High Court, an emergency hearing, and the Conservative conference in Brussels resumed. All of a sudden, the mayor didn't have the power. But last week, Kevin, Brussels police stormed the National Conservatism Conference to close down the event just as Nigel Farage took the stage. The mayor of Brussels justified the order to ban the conference, saying the far right is not welcome. If there needs to be an example of the definition of cancel culture, there it is.
You're dead right, Chris. And, you know, I've mentioned Orwell, as you have. He argued that if language can control how people think, how you think is controlled by language. And one of the things that the cultural left or cultural Marxism does, and it goes back to an academic, Herbert Marcuse, who actually argued in an essay he wrote about tolerance and intolerance, that it's okay for the left to shut down debate, to close off debate, to no platform speakers, to censor the media or the press, because he argued if you look at Western societies like Australia or the UK or America, he argued if the revolution was going to succeed, it was okay to do anything you could, no matter how immoral or wrong or intolerant. The greater good was to have the revolution, so anybody who disagreed with you was cancelled. And that's what's been happening with people like Jermaine Greer, like J.K. Rowling. This conference is only the latest where a socialist or a left-wing politician, whether it's a mayor in Brussels or wherever it might be, they shut down, they use the police and the state to censor or stifle free debate, open inquiry. And as we all know, that's the basis of our free and open society. So it's something we must always fight against.
And I'd like to sort of reveal to you a conversation I had with one of my friends who lives in France over the weekend. And this story popped up and I raised it and they had heard of it. But they said to me, you've got to understand what the mood is like in a place like Brussels. There is a very large contingent of Islamic politicians, of Islamic activists. They place the pressure on the likes of the mayor, the government in Brussels, etc., to make sure that they are mollycoddled, that they are looked after, that their entitlements are agreed to, and any kind of criticism of the way, you know, the Islamic religion might play in a Western civilized society, oh, that's a no-no. And the likes of this mayor, no wonder they shut this down, because it's not about someone being far right. It's not about someone saying we should be violent. It's not about a group saying, you know, we need to storm the barricades. None of that. It's just a far right wing view, maybe, although Nigel Farage has had some extraordinary views. I don't think he's far right wing. But having said that, what this is a different mood in that you've got Brussels, which is overcome by an Islamic population that really apply the screws on civic leaders.
Well, another good example, as you know, Chris, recently in Sydney, there was a 16-year-old who stabbed a Christian bishop while the bishop was giving mass. And obviously this young boy had been indoctrinated, he'd been very heavily influenced by what I call fundamentalist Islam. Now, he didn't try and hide what he did. He admitted, in fact, that the bishop had to be silenced because the bishop was critical of the prophet, of Muhammad, of Islam. But you then had a number of Labour politicians who didn't want to use the word terrorism because they're so afraid, yeah, the Labour Party in Sydney, but also parts of Melbourne,
yep,
where there are quite a few electorates where people are voting for politicians, where there's a heavy Muslim population.
Correct.
And so they don't tell the truth. They won't admit that it's terror. They try and disguise that. Mm. And that's what's happening in Europe as well.
Yeah, very, very true. You've got to call it as it is. And thankfully, the New South Wales Police Department called it the next morning at 1:30 a.m. They didn't waste any time. They weren't calling press conferences at 10 a.m. Yeah. to declare it. So, you know, and that's the way it was. That's the way it is. And I noticed that the lawyer for the accused boy is now saying that he's had a very troubled lifetime in terms of mental illness, etc. Well, let them go down that path. But you've got to call it the way it is. It is terror. The way it was done and the words that were used by the boy, allegedly himself, were all the signature moves and sounds of a terrorist doing something to hurt someone else in the name of extreme Islam. And that's exactly what it was. And we've got to call it that way. We've just got to call it that way. And we shouldn't be accepting any kind of intimidation from activists in any group, whether it's the Islamic group or the Catholic groups. We should just call it the way it is and tell the truth. Kevin Donnelly, great to have you on the program today. And it's really timely to speak with you with so much of this occurring in front of us right now. Thanks again.
Always a pleasure, Chris.
Good on you. Dr. Kevin Donnelly, AM. And a man who's fought the good fight against political correctness, but also against cancel culture and some of these issues that are occurring now with the eSafety Commissioner, with the words we're hearing from the police commissioner in New South Wales about the fact that police will be in charge of the truth, is just outrageous. It's almost as if I'm living in a parallel world. And I'll tell you again why you don't believe what the New South Wales police tell you. We've had a royal commission that showed us what kind of ingrained corruption existed in the New South Wales Police. Are you telling me that some of that doesn't happen today? And secondly, we've had two versions of what occurred last Monday night at Wakeley. One version was 10 badly damaged police cars and 20 damaged in total. Well, now it's reached 100 today. What happened in 7 days? And there's not 600 there. There were thousands there, according to the footage that they saw. So don't necessarily believe what you're being told, especially by the New South Wales Police Force. Let's take a break for news on TNT.
Turn on the news!
News flash.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. Australia's Prime Minister has lashed out at ex-owner Elon Musk for refusing to comply with his government's censorship demands. It comes as both sides of Australia's parliament step up their efforts to censor whatever they deem to be inappropriate or fake news on social media. And US lawmakers have been slammed for waving Ukrainian flags on the floor of the House of Representatives after approving another $60 billion for Kyiv's war effort.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's news talk, TNT Radio.
2021, Anthony Albanese announced his plan to reduce electricity prices by $275 per household by 2025. It got enormous applause from the Labor faithful. Albo was delivering a $275 reduction in my power bill. I've got to vote for him. Of course, most of us have been there, done that, knew then that it was a lie, and we now know what we know. It certainly was. As a matter of fact, electricity prices have gone the other way about threefold. 2025 is now less than 9 months away, and the promise is looking totally unachievable. With the budget coming up, the Prime Minister has hinted some energy relief package will be used. But how do they all of a sudden fabricate any kind of relief in our energy bill. There's no such thing as a free lunch. There's no such thing as free electricity. So why all of a sudden is my $800 bill coming in at, say, $600? Very interesting to see what games and fakery they play with the numbers in the budget. And how is it possible with such increasing reliance on unreliable wind and solar power, which has been proven to be expensive as well? My next guest, a regular on TNT, is following this closely. Dr. Alan Moran is Principal of Regulation Economics. He's a noted economist who analyzes from a free market perspective. He was the director of the Deregulation Unit at the Institute of Public Affairs from 1996 to 2014. He was previously a senior official in Australia's Productivity Commission and director of the Commonwealth Office of Regulation Review. He joins us live from Melbourne. Alan Moran, welcome back to TNT. Good to have you on.
Good to be here, Chris. Good to be here.
I can't believe it. We've had Renee Heath from Melbourne. We've had Kevin Donnelly from Melbourne. And we've had Alan Moran from Melbourne. All the best brains seem to be located in one city, Alan.
I'm very pleased to be in that company, yes.
Yes. All right, Anthony Albanese said in 2021, he was certain that $275 per household electricity reduction was done, would happen. They'd modelled it. It was underway. Gee, you wouldn't trust anything a politician says about anything that was coming into your pocket ever again, would you?
Well, I don't think we did even then, at least you and I didn't, but there's certainly a number of people did because they voted for him and they used it at face value. Maybe now they do recognize that it was a lie or it was a massive exaggeration. Basically, prices, as you've noted, have gone up. The retail price has gone up about as much as Labour said it would be going down. And there's a lot more in the pipeline to increase that price, as we'd all know. We've got, and it's been driven by the wish for the government, and to some degree the previous government, to actually eradicate coal as part of our power mix. Mm. And to do that, they put these massive subsidies on wind and solar, subsidies that now amount to over $15 billion a year, which is something like $1,500 per household. So I tell you what then, Chris, you said how could we reduce our price? Well, if we eliminated all these subsidies and all this government money going into wind and solar, if we eliminated that, there would be a saving of at least $1,500 per household. And it would be considerably more than that, because essentially that cost, initial cost, is driving other factors. It's driving a deindustrialization. And we've seen that in recent days, where the last major plastic manufacturer has closed its doors. In Melbourne. We've seen it with the smelting industry. Nickel is the latest one, but already we've got aluminium. It's only operating now because the government is giving it subsidies. So, I mean, there's obviously a way you can reduce costs by giving subsidies. But as we know, the government doesn't have any money to give subsidies. It can only give subsidies by taking it from URI or from the population in general. So, you know, we've got these huge costs. They're driving up the price of energy and driving out our best manufacturing firms and generally impoverishing us. And the end of this is not in sight. We're seeing far more year by year, new plans being proffered and introduced. When the previous government or the present government came into power, those subsidies of $15.6 billion now were almost half that. So they've introduced already several brand new programs which have driven up the subsidy, and there's more in the pipeline. They're talking about winner picking policy now we have, where a lot of cash is being given to government agencies to pick out what they think are the promising firms. Well, you know, we've seen that story many times, and all the promising firms we picked in the past are now bankrupt, and this will be the same for the future.
Well, there was that, is it Tritium that crashed? This was the EV infrastructure builder that's fallen on its backside, but they were the poster child for Anthony Albanese.
They were. It was a nice lot of government subsidies in that one as well. There's just one after the other. We can cite every case where the government has given money. You probably remember some years ago, it damn near bankrupted the state of South Australia because they were giving far more than others. But you know, we cannot find a single example of where government has backed a firm and that firm has come into prosperity. All they've done is back losers.
So in the real world, Alan, what has happened to the wholesale and retail electricity prices?
Well, the retail prices have gone up about $150, but it's very difficult to actually estimate them because they're controlled in various ways. In the end, they follow market forces. In the end, the costs will go up, the price has to go up. But they can suppress that for some time. The wholesale price, though, you know, we were told that we're going to switch to wind and solar, and this is the cheapest form of energy. CSIRO told us, everybody told us we were going to be a lot better off, and we're going to have clean energy. Well, the wholesale price, which is the price X generator, has gone from less than $40 per megawatt hour to over 100. And every time there's a sort of a hiccup, the price goes down, maybe for a quarter due to whatever it is, due to COVID, it went down for a little while due to COVID because people weren't using as much electricity. And people said, we'll turn the corner. Prices are coming down now. It's great with big savings for you. Well, within months have gone up again. They cannot do anything other than go up because we are sacking, substituting low-cost, reliable energy in coal and gas for this unreliable energy in wind and solar, which is not only, well, because it's unreliable, not only is it expensive, but we have to build a whole lot of batteries, a whole lot of transmission lines, a whole lot of other things just to make it work. Yep. And all of that's got to be paid for somehow.
Yeah, not to mention, you mentioned transmission network. This is the most expensive. Now, in your latest article in The Spectator Australia, titled Broken Promises, Broken Budgets, you state direct and regulatory support for renewables, wind, solar, comes to at least $15.6 billion a year. I've never heard that figure. I've heard $9 billion. I've heard $12 billion, but you're saying $15.6 billion. Wow.
And it's not that difficult to estimate this, but isn't it strange? The government never tells us.
No.
They have whole departments which are looking at costs. They must know what it is. It's never told. They used to tell us back about a dozen years ago. They were very proud. They had a whole section in the budget to say, add up how much is being spent by CSIRO, by this agency and that agency. And it came to a number and they patted themselves on the back. I think they've now decided, wait a minute, people now might think, that this isn't good value for money, and it isn't. Basically, they can see it's not good value for money because their electricity prices and their gas prices are going through the roof.
Mm. 15.6, how is this massive amount made up? Where do you get that figure from?
It's all from public data.
Right.
Okay. Some of it's from the budget. Budget agencies have to account for how much they're spending, so they have given budgets. So we see things like the Clean Energy Bank and various things like that. The actual management of the market as a result of the renewable subsidies, managing those. And we see the subsidies themselves. And one after the other, we've seen more of these subsidies come in. It started very small with John Howard. He had this, it was called MRET then. It was Mandatory Renewable Energy Target. 2% of energy or additional energy was going to come from wind and solar, and we're now talking 30%. And to get to that level, we've had to jack up the subsidies year by year, and we're now spending, well, not on those subsidies and on in various programs, we're now spending this $15.6 billion per year.
Unbelievable.
And you won't see that in government papers. And nobody would say, no, that's not correct. I've never heard anybody say that's not correct. It's certainly the number which is, and I've used it often, others have used it, it's a number which is easy enough to add up if you spend a few days in poring over budget papers, etc. But it's all from public data.
Wow. I've got to take a break. I'd love to come back and talk to you about how our energy prices compare with others around the world and a few other bits and pieces related to this topic, because we're being done over here. We're being fried slowly, and the Australian public needs to wake up. Alan Moran, stay right where you are. We'll come back after a break on TNT.
From weather and traffic reports, to news of political developments.
We turn to journalists for the information we need to live our daily lives.
Journalists around the world provide the news that is essential for democracy,
for personal freedom, and for safety and stability.
Yet their ability to report freely and safely is under attack like never before.
Too many journalists are paying with their lives.
They face exponential risks, and they've already paid a heavy toll.
Death threats, online harassment, and physical attacks
are becoming a daily experience of journalists in all countries.
We just want people to be safe, to be able to get our readers the information that they need to make informed decisions.
They checked my phone and realized that it was Pegasus. I feel myself like I'm naked at the street.
These charges were politicized from the start.
Facts win. Truth wins. Justice wins.
C'est énorme pour moi d'être là, d'être libre. Surtout que je m'y attendais pas du tout.
Stand with a free press.
Stand with journalists whose reporting won't be silenced. Press freedom is your freedom.
Eggs. You can fry them, scramble them, poach them, boil them, or race them on a spoon. But uncooked eggs can be a risk for food poisoning. To be safe, avoid buying dirty or cracked eggs. Always wash your hands after handling eggs. And if you're concerned, pregnant, elderly, or have a poor immune system, make sure you cook eggs until the yolk starts to firm. Or look for new pasteurized eggs. For excellent eggs, handle them safely.
You're listening to Chris Smith on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I've got Dr. Alan Moran with me now. We're talking about the renewable evangelism that has taken hold in Australia, but to a degree beyond any part of the rest of the world. Is there any government anywhere, Alan, that thinks that they can supply to their people affordable baseload power through wind and solar only?
Yes, there is. I mean, and it's a quite odd. I mean, the one which is a forerunner in this is Germany, which is a coalition of parties, including the Greens and their party. And they have closed down, at least mainly closed down their coal stations, or closed down their nuclear and their reliance on renewables. The Germany, though, has an advantage which Australia doesn't have, and that is part of a European complex of power. Yeah. Generation. So, you know, if the wind doesn't blow, the sun doesn't shine, they import their power from Poland, which has got a lot of coal, or from France, which has got nuclear. Yeah. So, yes, there are nations who...
But it's comparing apples with oranges, isn't it, really?
Well, it is, because we don't have any support. We're an island on our own.
Yeah. So if you can come up with that figure of $15.6 billion, with all the different programs for so-called green energy across federal and state governments, and I should say local councils, how difficult would it be to calculate the true cost of the transition itself?
Well, I think it wouldn't be that difficult to do, because you'd use that number and then build on it. You know, each time you have to have a new increment of wind and solar, you have to jack up the prices. And indeed, there's various people calling for that jack up now. There's a investor group on green energy, whatever. They're saying that, you know, we're not doing enough. We've got to spend some more money. Of course, as we've mentioned before, Anthony Albanese is spending some more money, but they're calling for even more. They realize that, you know, anybody who looks at it knows that even though you might talk about green energy is the cheapest, only the cheapest if you take it when it's available, but it's not available all the time. So if you want a reasonably consistent supply of energy, you have to, quote, firm it up, and you firm it up with something like batteries or Snowy 2 or indeed gas plant, which is the latest one that they're talking about firming it up with. But, you know, there are other nations who've gone as far as Australia. As I say, Germany's probably gone further. Germany actually has the highest electricity prices in the world, just about the highest. Australia is getting up there with them.
So compare prices for us between Australia and the United States.
Well, the United States is considerably lower. They have, the Biden administration does have a whole subsidy program for energy like we have, not as severe as ours. In the United States, though, there are differences from the states themselves. Different states have different powers and adopt the policies to different degrees. For example, California has got very, very high energy prices, and that's because they have essentially, well, they've closed down virtually all their, closed down all the coal, closed down almost all their gas, and they're basically reliant on adjacent states to import for when they're short. Places like Florida and Texas and many of the southern states themselves have got much lower energy prices because they don't support, at least don't support as drastically, the wind and solar. So the overall, it's a very, very difficult to an overall price, but on average, the price in Australia is 20-25% higher than the average of the United States, but it's much higher than the more successful states.
But Alan, I hear what you're saying, but I think to myself, we only have a population of 20-odd million. We have some of the greatest natural resources in the world. We should be paying 25% less than they are in the United States.
And exactly, that's what we were. When, we, you know, at the turn of this century, the turn of the 2000s, we had the cheapest power in the world. We were much less than the United States. We had a gas price which was comparable to the United States. Our gas price now is four times that of the United States. But governments have refused to allow people to search for gas or refused to allow them to use the right technology to extract it. And our electricity prices, as I say, have now risen to way above. They're much below those nations which haven't been so reliant on renewable energy. I'm talking here about China, about India, about Indonesia. These developing countries, ironically, these developing countries now have about 70% of the greenhouse gas emissions. And if you may recall, the whole reason why this madness started because we had to suppress the greenhouse gas emissions, which, you know, they've been held. They haven't decreased very much, but they've been held down in most of the developed countries, but they're shot through the roof. And the net effect on the world has been not very much.
Yeah.
So, you know, but we have impoverished ourselves. We've taken this very high burden and applied it to our industries. We're losing those industries. The rest of the world is just basically going ahead and steaming with coal and gas and uranium as well.
Still comparing prices between the United States and Australia, if Donald Trump were to win in November, I'd imagine the way he's talking at the moment and referring to more traditional, reliable sources of energy, that we might see Australia pay double the amount for electricity than what the United States will be paying.
I think that's true. Trump, of course, in his first administration, only administration so far, left this Paris Agreement and did as little as he could to put the subsidies on wind and solar. He's basically said, "I'm going to leave it again. We're going to go back. We're not going to accept the fact that we handicap our industries while other countries don't. So we're going to go full tilt into wind, solar, and of course nuclear. Wind, solar. We're going to leave, and we're going to nuclear, coal, and gas." And that will effectively put a lot of pressure on everyone, because basically what that means is you've got a developed country with an open market, welcoming of foreign capital. It's going to be like a vacuum cleaner, bringing all the investment into the United States, which has got this comparative advantage now in low energy prices, even more so than it's got at the present time. There's already a lot of industry moving there to take advantage of low prices. With Donald Trump, it will come gushing in there, and there will be immense pressures on the rest of the developed world, including Australia, to actually back off on these very damaging subsidy systems we have in place.
I want to go to one of our listeners and one of our viewers, Dan, who's on our talkback line right now. Dan, you want to talk about energy prices? Go right ahead.
Yeah, just listening to the conversation there, Chris, I think we should be calling this economic warfare. You know, it's war by other means. and our ability as a nation to defend ourselves is being destroyed by high energy prices, and our like strategic industries are being destroyed. Now, whoever's doing this, I think it's deliberate. So that's all I want to put out there.
But we could destroy the entire ocean population of whales, and the Greens would not say a word, because all they care about now is the evangelism of renewables, Dan.
But it's designed to tear us down and make us weak and vulnerable and break us, Chris. And so we have to resist that and identify who's doing it, and just, it is warfare by other means, and it's deliberate.
Good on you, Dan. Thank you very much for that. And yet I look on the other side of politics, Alan Moran, and I see what the Liberal Party and the National Party are planning on doing. It doesn't seem to me to be too much different to what the Albanese government's doing in terms of renewables.
That's very sad. And it's certainly not going to do as much as the Albanese government, but they too are sort of blinkered into saying, well, or they're fearful of a backlash from the voters, who have been had this fed them for 20 years now, that clean green is essential, we're going to save the world for it, and it won't cost you very much, if anything, may even be a benefit. So they daren't raise their head above the wall there, because they're frightened of it being blown off. And in fact, the Queensland Premier has made some, Queensland opposition leader has made some very pro-green comments in recent days, which has appalled some of some of his colleagues in the Liberal and Country Party or National Party. The same thing is happening in the UK as well. In the UK, and when they voted there for their net zero out of the 650 MPs they have in their House of Parliament, I think there's only five or six who actually voted against it. Now, there are more against it now, but it's that people are very fearful about being depicted as flat earthers and dinosaurs and whatever. So we are going to hell in a handcart, and we're pushing it ourselves.
Yeah, very true. One last one. I've got a press release here in front of me from Google, right? Now, it's Earth Day, Alan, Earth Day. April 22 is Earth Day, and it says, as we mark Earth Day, April 22nd, Google Australia has announced today a new fuel efficiency routing feature on Google Maps, offering Australians more sustainable ways to get from A to B. The new feature lets drivers choose the most fuel or energy efficient route, leveraging Google's AI to help people see the relative fuel, energy, and time savings between different routes and choose what's best for them. This update builds on global announcements of several new features across Google Maps and Search to help people to make sustainable transport choices more easily. These tools will include show public transit or walking suggestions, help drivers find information about the location of EV chargers, and understand the estimated emissions of flying in Google flights. Hey?
Oh, it's great PR, isn't it? Can you imagine anybody actually using that to make any substantial decisions?
Exactly. Yeah. Don't go from don't drive from Sydney to Parramatta. Yeah, we've got a walking route you can follow to your business meeting.
Yeah. Oh no, they're a joke, aren't they? I mean, they're a joke to us, but they think it's serious, and they obviously get some plaudits from some people, because that's why they do it. They spend a bit of money, assembling that data together, but. Seriously, is that going to affect anybody's substantive position? No, of course not.
It's just virtue signaling online. But anyway, I thought I'd throw that in at the end to prove what sort of evangelism we've got coming at us at 100 miles an hour. Thank you so much for your time, Alan Moran. Great to have you on the program.
Thanks, Chris.
Dr. Alan Moran, always good to catch up with him. I've run out of time. Sonia Poulton is coming up next from the UK. You stay with her. I'll be back at the same time tomorrow. Looking forward to your company then. Tell your friends, tell your family to come right here with Chris Smith on TNT.